This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at jwright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio, you can listen now not only on the Odyssey app, which is free to download, free to listen. You can also listen on the TuneIn radio app as well as the iHeart radio app. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. Follow him on Twitter on X at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Happy Friday, Jeffrey.
Happy Friday to all. My company, as he is each and every Friday on the program, he, of course, is VSiN's college football, college basketball betting tailgate, or I should say betting podcast host. You can also see him on the Betting Tailgate show Saturdays, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow him on Twitter on X at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
Hello there. Hello. How we doing?
Really regretting not maxing Scotty last night.
Yeah. He got up to like plus 615 or something like that, I believe, on Wednesday evening out here in Vegas. And I decided to go into this British Open
scot-free.
Scot-free. Did not make a single bet on the British Open. So I am I'm sitting back and watching it and saying, yeah, it'd be nice to have a little Scottie Scheffler 6-1 in my pocket right now as he is doing Scottie Scheffler things. But I don't know, Matt Fitzpatrick's playing pretty well right now.
He is, but who do you want to bet on over 36 holes with
it,
straight up? Like, that's the other thing. It's not like Fitzpatrick has a lead.
No. I mean, he might be – Scottie very well could go into – the clubhouse with the lead. He's got two holes left, right?
Yeah.
He's got 17 and 18. So, yeah, we will see. Where are you on the Open Championship in favorite sporting events? Because my partner on VSiN, Matt Humans, who is a – I'm not saying this in a negative way. He's an interesting guy. And he loves the British Open because
he's an international man of mystery.
Well, because it's all throughout the night, so he can,
yep.
He doesn't really sleep, so he's like, yeah, it starts at 10:30 our time, and then it doesn't finish up until, you know, early in the afternoon, so he loves the British Open. I also think he was in good spirits because he has Scottie Scheffler,
mm-hmm.
Matt Fitzpatrick, I think he also has Bobby Mack,
yep.
McIntyre.
Data loved him, too.
So he's got a bunch of guys that he's feeling pretty good about. So, I think that was putting him in good spirits as well.
So, it had historically always been my third favorite major. So, in terms of watching, I probably watch the most golf, but that's largely because it's on during the day. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So, and there's, you know, there's so many events, but like, it's obviously going to be behind every big football game. It'll still be behind baseball playoffs. It'll be behind basketball playoffs. Although I've been getting more increasingly annoyed at the NBA playoffs because I just feel like even these series that are going seven games, we get like one game that you remember. It's like a bunch of blowouts one way or the other. And so it's just not as fun to watch. But as the U.S. Open, as the players kind of got their way and started whining so much that the USGA kind of backed off and stopped making it the pure like mental, like just ass kicking test, that got less fun. Oakmont did renew my spirits for the U.S. Open and give me hope, but I think that's just course dependent. So as that kind of happened, the one thing about the Open Championship is that you're always going to have weather usually. And that's interesting because they really, you can tell they hate wind, like the what it does to their golf ball. And so they, I enjoy watching kind of the mental test, and the Open is, the Open's probably gotten up there even with the U.S. Open for me.
Yeah, I mean, you're much bigger into golf than I am. I just always love the Masters.
I think it's just really tough to argue. The Masters, there's something about where it is on the calendar, the presentation of it. Yeah, is it Disney World golf? Sure. But you know what? Disney World can be fun too.
Disney World's, I mean, I am pro Disneyland right now living out
here.
Yeah,
you're closer. And the thing that's nice about Disneyland is you can do it all in a day.
You can accomplish the feat in,
yes,
in for us 2 days, but I think we could do it in one now. I think we could pull that off. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't trying to compare the British Open to any football or whatever, but
because it's just such a different animal. You know what I mean?
It would have been nice if somehow we could petition the folks across the pond. Hey, could you start this on Wednesday? That would be nice. I guess technically for me, it did start on Wednesday.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, Wednesday night.
Is it always this week?
So they've been screwing with the calendar so much. This, in a non-Olympic year, this is around when it is. But now, you know, historically, it had been the third major, and it was more of like around like the first week of July or the second, you know, the second or third. Like it was usually a little bit further up. But last year, to get everything in before the Olympics, remember they had to like screw with the calendar. But it is, I think moving it to the last major of the year has helped the Open Championship, because you've now had, like, where I think the PGA has always struggled is, like, there's just never going to be a clear identity for what the PGA Championship is. And so for a while, like, people joked about it, but when they had the slogan of Glory's Last Shot, it kind of worked. It was like the last chance to save your season. Like, yes, everyone acknowledged it was the fourth of fourth majors, but it was still a major. And now the Open Championship is kind of taking on, A, the history of being the oldest major, and then B, it's also everybody's last chance to, like, save the year. And so I think it's elevated it even more.
By the way, Scotty just birdied 17, yep. So he's now your leader at 10 under. And he has now moved out to minus 190 to win this bad boy.
I believe he is first in strokes gained approached and second in strokes gained putting. If Scottie Scheffler is going to be the second best putter in the field, this is over.
Well, and yesterday, correct me if I'm wrong, he only hit three fairways yesterday.
Now, some of that, like, he hit three fairways, and I think Rory hit three fairways. One of them drove it significantly worse than the other. Rory was like missing off the planet, and Scotty was a lot of times when Scotty was missing, he was still able to like advance the ball. Rory was like having to hit, and Rory was like hitting out of bunkers and like punching out.
Yeah, I don't want to say, and do you have a Scotty ticket?
No, I'm regretting.
Okay. Okay,
I'm so like you.
I'm not trying to mush anyone.
No. Neither am I. I should be clear. Because I am obviously the king of reverse jinxing and whatnot. So I want to be clear.
It feels like this is just a formality now.
He just feels so inevitable, because I was explaining it to George. when you watch the whole round, you just realize, like, he doesn't hit bad shots. Like, everybody else is kind of, they have holes where they're throwing their club, as I watch John Rahm toss his wedge. Yeah. Like, Scotty just, like, whatever, like, if you're watching it on the featured groups and you're watching, like, the behind on every single shot, the behind camera view, he just hits the exact shot you're supposed to hit every time and he never misses.
Yeah.
All right, I want to see for the tournament. Okay, he is, I want rank rather than value. Okay, for the tournament, yep, second in strokes gained putting. He's now, I guess, fallen back to second in strokes gained approach, but this hasn't updated because it still has him at 8 under the Data Golf website. So he's probably going to be leading the field in strokes gained approach and strokes gained putting. And if that's the case, good night.
Yeah.
He just feels inevitable.
But sometimes, you know, I'm not trying to compare him to Tiger, but, you know, when we watched Tiger, it was like, I'm still watching Tiger. So I think I'll still watch.
Yeah, no, I'll watch, but it feels like the only way he doesn't win is if he gets arrested tomorrow. Yeah.
The folks up in Northern Ireland know better than that. They know exactly who he is.
If Rory,
unlike the folks in
Rory was closer... If Rory was closer than 3 under, I do think there would be... I think he'd need a police presence.
You know, I'm trying to think of who are some of the names that were thrown out there. So, like, do I have bettor's remorse? I wasn't going to bet Scotty because that's just what I do.
Massive favorite in a 156-man field. Like, a lot of people will tell you, like, that's not a wise bet. At the same time, it's like, you and I right now would like to be holding that ticket.
Yeah. Well, and think about it too. Once again, he was still the betting favorite, but he had drifted out to north of 6-1.
Yeah.
Which for Scottie Scheffler at this point in his career is a steal.
Yeah, and then also this major is the most unpredictable because you never know like what the weather is. Like George and I were talking, it was like a torrential downpour 45 minutes ago. Then the sun came out, and it looked like it was a Chamber of Commerce day, and now it's back to looking miserable.
So if he wins this, he'll be one away from the career slam.
Correct. He would have to win the U.S. Open.
Yep. Which
at some point, inevitable. He'll be fine.
I mean, he was, what, tied for second just a couple of years ago? So his U.S. Opens have gone T7, 41, 3, 2, and 7.
Let me look where it is. Ironically, the U.S. Open that Matthew Fitzpatrick won when it was outside of Boston, if Scotty would have putted like a blind person, he would have won. Instead, he putted like a blind person that also did not have limbs. All right, so we also, okay, let's see what we got coming up on the program because it's a fun show today. We got Blake Topmeyer coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on, we've got the preseason SEC award, so we'll talk through that with him and some other things from college football. We will also get into the list, and then it's now becoming a yearly tradition, thanks to Tim and his friendship with Doug Ellen. It is the 21st anniversary of Entourage, so Doug
it
Ellen...
can drink.
It can drink now. I'm pretty sure Entourage was always an underage drinker.
I think that's
pretty safe to say. But Doug Ellen, we had him on last year. It was an absolute blast, so looking forward to having Doug rejoin the program at 3:30. Okay, so I wanted to go through what was more interesting to you, the predicted order of finish in the SEC or the preseason teams?
I think it was the predicted order.
Okay.
Because, well, first off, the hilarity of Vanderbilt getting 2 first place votes
again
is amazing. Did they get it last year?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of cheeky writers that do it.
Okay. But what jumped out to me was, and I guess it goes hand in hand, but the love for South Carolina.
Okay, I'm glad you said it because I want to also be very clear on this. I don't know how I would have voted on the preseason player list, but man, does it feel like we have just fast-tracked Lenoris Sellers to a level that I don't think he's actually proven to be at.
So I'm not saying you're wrong. I guess the counterpoint is, who should have been first team All-SEC quarterback?
I that's why I'm willing to say...
I guess you could go... I guess Nussmeier would have been fine with me. Are you surprised? All right, what's more surprising to you?
I wish I could have seen the voting breakdown, because Texas finishing ahead of Georgia to me is not all that surprising. And
no,
also,
that's not surprising.
It was really close. It was like 43 points. So I'm just purely going off my gut. Seeing Lenoris be the first team All-SEC quarterback in the preseason caught my attention more than Texas finishing ahead of Georgia. But I do acknowledge the fundamental problem with this is, okay, if not him, who?
Right. And I think you could go Nussmeier. But what's interesting is Arch Manning got third team preseason.
Yep.
And look, I live in the betting world. You love the gamble. He's the betting favorite to win the Heisman Trophy. And I know, and I understand why. Because you have a preseason top three team with an elite coach, elite play calling coach, a player whose name is royalty in the sport. And he's really good,
yep.
We think. So from a betting standpoint, him being the favorite to win the Heisman Trophy makes sense because they're
and it's
to
also
predict.
And to your point, what we've been talking about all summer, there's also a lack of proven, like,
correct,
game changers.
But I'm a little surprised that the media has voted him third team all SEC. In a conference that, you know, you look at the conference, and it is kind of loaded at quarterback. Now, there are questions, right? I mean, Ty Simpson, we don't know what he is. Gunnar Stockton, we don't know what he is. But, like, I guess I'm surprised a little bit. And, like, once again, I go back to my partner in crime on VSiN Primetime, Matt Eumanns, who he and I do the podcast together during the football season. And he is not one who buys into the hype. And, like, he's all in on Arch. And once again, I'm not trying to be an Arch hater.
I think
I'm
he has
surprised.
A, I think surprised. He has a super high floor and has nothing to do with his last name. I think he has a super high floor because I think it's entirely possible the best collection of talent is around him, and he has a coach that is very good at scheming up and
sure,
getting quarterbacks to be successful.
So as you look at the SEC quarterbacks, like, should Diego Pavia have been voted ahead of Arch Manning for preseason? Or are the media members who voted on this trying to predict the future in that regard and saying, no, we think that Arch will be better than Diego Pavia? Is it supposed to be, what have you done? Or is it supposed to be, what are you going to do?
I think it's, you know, I'm kind of the same way with Heisman voting. I don't really care what your formula is. I only ask that you watch the games. My biggest problem with Heisman voters is most of them do not watch until championship
right,
week. So that's, but I don't, like, you can have your system, I can have mine. I would personally treat it as I'm trying to predict who I think will have the best year.
Then Arch Manning being third team, I think, makes sense. I guess I would have a hard time, if I were voting on this, I would have a hard time saying Arch Manning is going to be the third best quarterback. Now, I guess, to play devil's advocate, Cooper Flagg was a preseason first team All-American.
It is weird how we have less of a problem with it in basketball than we
right,
do. But I think it's partly the nature of the...
We know that freshmen can step in
yeah,
basketball and just do it.
Yeah. Now, we've also seen freshmen do it in football, but there is more of a, all right, let's see it, boy. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So let's run through the quarterbacks real quickly. So once again, SEC first team is Lenoris Sellers. Second team, Garrett Nussmeier from LSU. Third team, Arch Manning of Texas. Would you put Ty Simpson ahead of any of those three from Alabama?
No.
Would you put Arkansas's Talon Green ahead of any of those three?
I'm higher on Green than most people are, but no.
Would you put Auburn's Jackson Arnold ahead of any of those?
I'd think about it.
I would if we're predicting the future, I probably would have put DJ Lagway ahead.
So this is the thing that I was actually going to bring up. the way that Lenoris Sellers is getting treated is the way that I feel about DJ Lagway. Like, I am convinced if this guy puts it all together, he is the real deal. I have much higher hopes for him.
So when I put together my returning quarterbacks or top quarterbacks in 2025, I put Lagway 2. Like, I'm super high on Lagway. And I'm not really worried about the shoulder thing because I think that's been pretty much put to the side.
Did you listen to Bud Elliott's Summer School with Florida? So it came out on Saturday.
No, I have not.
I listened to it on Saturday. It's a little weird because
the shoulder
thing? Yeah, it's actually a little concerning. Like, they're being super cagey about it. They shut him down completely. And I do not care about spring reps, but it was like, the way that they were being so cagey about it, it was like, what's up?
All right, so I think we agree that we probably would have put Lagway within one of the top three teams?
Yes.
Okay. Would you put Gunnar Stockton ahead of any of those three?
No.
Would you put... I'm running down the list,
no,
but...
I'm with you.
Would you put Zach Calzada...
No. So this is what I told George, and this can kind of make this exercise a little different. With the exception of Zach Calzada, with the exception of Talen Green, who, again, I think is better than his reputation, with Joey Aguilar and Blake Shapen. So those are the four.
I can't put Bo Prabula in there either.
So... Here would be my argument.
Okay.
I can envision a world where the rest of them, some are going to be super more likely than others, but I can envision a scenario where the rest of them wind up being first team all SEC. Like with Prabula, he's on the bottom end of my list, but I do think he's probably going to be the most talented quarterback that Drinkwitz has had, and he has a pretty good track record of getting really good production from quarterbacks.
And their schedule for
an SEC is very soft.
Very favorable. They don't leave Missouri until middle of October.
Again, he would be towards the bottom, but I can make the same case for Arnold. I'd make the same case for Mateer. I can make the same case for Austin Williams. I can make the case... Austin Simmons, beg your pardon. I can make the case for Lagway, as we pointed out.
Marcel Reed?
He was the one that I was... a little iffy on, but let's say, for instance, A&M came out on Bud Elliott's blue chip ratio, what, I think like 7th? If he is dynamic, running and throwing, and they exceed expectations, yeah, I can envision it. Do I like him the best? No, but you see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
If they're 11-1 and win the SEC, it's the same kind of case for Ty Simpson and Gunnar Stockton. I'm not super high on both of them, but if those guys hit and they're the best quarterback on the number one team in the country, there's a high chance that they're going to be first team all SEC.
Texas A&M, by the way, was 4th on his blue chip ratio.
Yeah, so you see what I'm saying? Like, it's less about him. It is more of a team thing, but I do think first team all quarterback more times than not is kind of a team award.
Yeah, so once again, I wanted to do this exercise because I think if you're basing it off of projection, I guess I get why Arch Manning is there, but I'm also a little surprised that John Mateer is not there because he's been getting a lot of hype this offseason.
He has been getting a lot of hype. I also think a lot of the hype is coming from OU. I think within the league, there's going to be some skepticism.
I mean,
you ain't playing the Mountain West, boy.
Right, well, and that's kind of what I've been saying all along, and I love Devin Dampier going to Utah because, well, the Big 12 is not the SEC.
Yeah.
And he has the best offensive line in the conference in front of him at Utah, and I don't know what Oklahoma's going to look like, and their schedule's brutal.
Now, I do think Oklahoma's better.
I think they're better.
But at the same time, it's like...
But also, you can't win the Heisman Trophy on a 7-win team.
I totally agree with you on that. My other thing is, like, everyone's like, well, you know, he's bringing his coordinator too. And it's like, y'all, there's more than just the quarterback playing the system. Like, the receivers have to make the side adjustments. Like, there's a lot of it just showing up and being good. Like, it's kind of hard. Like, the guys that I feel like that transfer in and have the most success are not the guys that largely do it with their arm. It's the Diegos of the world that are largely basically running like an option offense.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know what I mean? It's not as much of a precision. It's not as complicated of a passing scheme. But, like, I looked it up. And, again, it's not a perfect stat. I acknowledge it. But it's not a nothing burger either. Do you know how many games Lenoris had last year where he had at least an 80 of a PFF grade out of 100?
I'm going to say, like, two.
He had two.
Good guess.
One was Clemson, and the other was it LSU?
We were checking this earlier. Which
it's not was it's not LSU because he went 9-16 against LSU.
Was it the A&M game?
No, because the A&M game he hits a bunch of shot That's play right. like it was a very up and down.
I feel like you might have left it up on the computer in the other room.
I do
look at it.
Yeah, the answer's two, and one was an 80, and one was an 80.1, and I do know one was Clemson. Like I'm not saying, like, I acknowledge the thing is hard, but it just feels like this is a hype train that I am as skeptical of this hype train as you are of the Arch hype train.
And I guess I'm not skeptical. I'm shocked that everybody is just all in on Arch.
Well, you know, it's been a really long time since there's been a Manning in the SEC.
It's true.
Like, we do like to play the hits down here.
Yeah, and I get it, man. Look, it's not just the SEC, man. It's across the country, man. I mean, we'll find out right away, right? I mean, it's not like they play North Texas week one. They play Ohio State. So maybe he goes out and he balls out, and I'm like, all right. Once again, I'm not trying to be skeptical. I'm surprised a bit that we're all in, but it is
Arch Manning. Sellers was the 104th quarterback in PFF last year. Like, this is such a monumental, like, swing up that I've been taken. I feel like there's very few times when I truly get surprised about a narrative. This one's taken me by surprise.
Yeah, I would say I'm more surprised that Sellers is first team than I am Arch's third, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I mean, this offseason's been a big offseason for him, man. You know, he's expected to be a top five pick in the NFL draft. You know, the story by Bruce Feldman I thought was great, you know, learning a little bit more about him. But yeah, there's a lot of, there's been a couple teams this offseason where I'm like, ooh, we should pump the brakes a little bit. And I think South Carolina might be one of them.
All right, let's take a quick break. Let's talk with Blake Topmeyer. Let's see if he feels the same way or if he thinks we're off base. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company. 92.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you, Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
On FM, ESPN. Blake Topmeyer is the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. His podcast is SEC Football Unfiltered. Episodes available each and every week on all major podcast forums. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at B Topmeyer. Blake, we've just been discussing, do we maybe need to pump the Lenora Sellers brakes just a hair?
Yeah, it feels like there's almost been an overcorrection. I mean, I thought like in February when you were starting to get kind of your earliest preseason quarterback rankings list, I think you could make the case that Sellers was probably a little bit undervalued. And then, you know, I don't know if it was the Bruce Feldman piece in The Athletic that really highlighted Sellers and pumped him up as like a potential top five draft pick. After the season, I don't know if it was that or what, but there was a shift probably like 6 weeks ago, I would say, where all of a sudden Sellers went from being what I thought was a little bit of an undervalued quarterback below the radar to now all of a sudden it's like the guy's the best quarterback in the SEC, which I don't know. I mean, he finished last year playing great, sure, but this conference is loaded with great quarterbacks this year, and so if Sellers is truly number one, then he's going to have a special season.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. What about I'm trying to Blake put this properly, because I just spent the last segment, I'm sure people think that I have no doubt and I think that he's gonna be a bust, but Arch Manning being third team, did that surprise you at all, knowing that what he started one game?
I think he had two starts last year. The Mississippi State game, and then I think he started like the one of the non-con games.
Well, I guess it depends on which way we're looking at this as a surprise, right? I mean, I probably would have put him first team, and some people probably would have left him off, leave him off the ballot entirely. Like that's the thing when you have a player like Arch. I don't think anybody would try to argue that his talents are not apparent, that his ceiling is not incredibly high. So it just depends on how you vote in these things. Like if you're trying to project, where people are going to end on postseason all conference lists, if you're trying to project the season that they may have, I mean, I think you can make compelling arguments for Arch Manning to be a first teamer. If you're someone who does your ballots very much influenced by the season that came before, then he's not going to get any votes from you. And so I think third team probably made the most sense, because when you have so many people voting in this, that's sort of an average of those two voting approaches, right? I'm sure there were people that voted for Arch first team and others that are more reticent toward voting for a guy who has two career starts. And so I think that's how you wind up behind, two incumbent starters, Lenora Sellers and Garrett Nussmeier, and wind up on third team. It kind of blends the two voting approaches together, I would say.
I think the thing that, as I've been talking through it with Tim, I think the thing that's actually annoying to me is, I think if I would have read DJ Lagway first team all SEC, I think I would have been less annoyed, because I feel like we're treating Lenoris like I actually view Lagway. I know he's not there yet, but I do have the highest hopes that he could be the best quarterback in the league, and I just don't see it with Sellers.
Yeah, I think I agree with you that Lagway has the higher ceiling. I think the thing with Sellers is he finished the season playing so well. Like, two of his best games were in November. He threw it all over the yard and torched Missouri in that game. And then he ran wild against Clemson and more of a defensive game. But, you know, he showed off why he's such a dual threat there. And then you compare that to Lagway, you know, who was banged up, missed a game with injury, wasn't really full speed. I mean, I think when you're projecting forward, I think I buy the thought that Lagway might have the higher ceiling. My concern with Lagway is coming off this throwing shoulder situation, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah,
the surgery to his throwing shoulder. That gives me a lot of pause before I would pencil him in, you know, at like first team, second team, all SEC, because it's like, I think he's a great player. He's a big play waiting to happen, but I want to see how healthy that shoulder is.
I told Tim, I was listening to Bud Elliott's Summer School, and I forget, is it Stuart Hall, the 24/7 writer for Florida, was on there, and hearing him break down the entire Lagway situation, which is like, shut him down for spring. It's like, okay, that's fine. I don't really care about spring reps at all. But the way that they've been very, honestly, lack of, like, there's no transparency. It's like the weirdness around the injury made me go, huh, that doesn't sound great.
No, I agree. And that's why I've been pumping the brakes a little bit on Lagway, like in any rankings lists that I do, because, like I said, I mean, as we know, there's so many different strategies for how to do this, but I do try to project forward on the season rather than just be reflective when I do like a quarterback's rankings list. And so, I think for the SEC, I may have had Lagway fourth on my list, if memory serves. And that's not totally how I feel about his talents, but I'm pretty concerned, I guess, based on, as you said, kind of the lack of transparency, lack of information. I mean, we see like a 10-second clip
yeah.
of him throwing with, you know, in some session with his throwing coach. And I mean, that's better than nothing, but that doesn't really tell me a ton. I agree with you as far as like being out for spring practice. I don't care about that one bit. That is irrelevant to me. It doesn't matter. It's more that he was, if he just would have been traveling the world,
yeah.
And, you know, climbing Everest in this spring practice, I don't care. The fact that he was out with an injury, that's what
yes.
concerns me. So, yeah, I had Lagway fourth in my pecking order of SEC quarterbacks. But if I'm getting 100% healthy DJ Lagway, which we really didn't see much of last season, then I think I'd have him higher than fourth.
I guess maybe prior to the Georgia game, you could say he was healthy-ish, but from that point forward, right, we didn't see him.
Right. Yeah, and he was so raw at that point.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, when we saw him healthy, he was the definition of inexperienced, right? And so then
yes.
as the season unfolds, he gets more experienced, but then he finishes the year not being healthy.
Correct. Not being able to move was
right.
was a big problem. I was also making this point to Tim. I think if I remove Calzada, Joey Aguilar, Blake Shapen, and George, I had one more. I have trouble. There's one other guy. Taylen Green. It's not super likely that these are not all the same, but I can kind of envision a scenario where almost every other quarterback winds up being the SEC, the first team all SEC quarterback. Again, it scales on massive, you know, there's a big gap in there, but I can envision a scenario where just about the rest of them wind up being the first team all SEC quarterback.
Yeah, it's certainly like probably, I would put it at like seven or eight guys that probably have an even more realistic chance.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you're leaving some long shots in there. Bo Prabula at Missouri, who we've talked about before.
Marcel Reed's the same thing. Like, again, I don't love him, but if, I mean, Bud Elliott's blue chip ratio came out and they were fourth. And if you tell me the number one, if A&M winds up being the number one team, and again, I'm not banking on it, but it is possible, and Reed's out there running and throwing around, I can
right.
see where he's going to get some support.
Right, and Jackson Arnold, yep. You know, coming off of a really rough season, but then you look at Auburn's
receivers. He could have just massive numbers.
Yeah, it's like Auburn either has the number one or number two best group of receivers in the conference, depending on how much you like LSU's receivers, I think. So, yeah, he could be – Jackson Arnold could be a mid-tier SEC quarterback and end up with the best numbers in the conference, yeah, because of who he's got in his supporting cast. So, yeah, I think that's right. And I think it speaks to – I think your larger point may be like there's not a lot of bad quarterbacks starting in this league anymore.
I think there are two.
I think there's at least one. I don't know what Aguilar is. I don't know if you're putting him in that mix. I really don't know what he is. I will admit I didn't watch a ton of App State.
I know this. He got his
year.
Coach fired. Now, yeah. He did also have – last year was a significantly worse year for him than the year prior, but he did get his coach at App State fired.
Yeah, it's not a great situation. I think, you know, Josh Heupel can help him because I think Josh is a great quarterback developer, but – yeah, anybody trying to polish Tennessee's situation as to being a good outcome from swapping Nico to Joey Aguilar, like they are Vols underpants. So that was a massive net loss for Tennessee. So yeah, I mean, I think Aguilar and Zach Calzada sit at the bottom of the conference.
Yeah, maybe Shapen too.
Coming off injury,
yeah,
don't know, right? I mean, I thought. I mean, I've seen him look good at times in his career, but you know, we haven't seen him in live fire in what 10 months now. So we'll see. And also, it's so unfair to him because
yeah,
he doesn't have the same type of weapons as some of these other guys. Calzada is interesting because like that guy's been around college football for an eternity now. He's a seventh year senior with his fourth program, and like that's the fun factoid is that the SEC's worst quarterback, or either 15 or 16, depending on how you're doing your list, owns an upset victory against
yes,
Nick Saban's Alabama. Right? Yeah, Calzada way back at Texas A&M, Spurs an upset of Alabama in 2021, and actually put up some great numbers.
Yeah, led a game-winning drive, too.
Yeah, yeah, and then I mean, it's the FCS, but he's coming off some great numbers there at Kentucky. But, I mean, I think, you know, he's fairly toward the bottom of the conference. But, yeah, I mean, other than that, this isn't the way the league used to be. The SEC's always had great talent. We know that. Line of scrimmage league, speed, et cetera, et cetera. But it was not
It was the league of game managers.
Yeah, it was not the home of the nation's best quarterbacks. Now it is. Doesn't mean there aren't good quarterbacks in other conferences. There are, particularly in the Big 12. And Cade Klubnik, you know, is a top five quarterback any way you slice it, I think, from Clemson. But in terms of the top-to-bottom best collection of quarterback talent, the SEC, I think, is running away with it this year.
Blake Topmeyer joining us here. Blake, when you look at the preseason poll that comes out, is there a team towards the bottom that you think is getting overlooked a bit?
Missouri at 12. And if you would have asked me to predict where Missouri would be, I would have said exactly here. I think there's still a very provincial nature of voting in the SEC's preseason media poll. I think there's a lot of media members that think Missouri, they're not any good. What are they doing in this conference? And it's like, actually, Missouri's got 21 wins in the last two seasons, and they have the most favorable schedule draw in the conference. So I could have predicted they would have been 12th, but to see them at 12, I think they are being vastly misjudged there because I think, and just in terms of team, I think Missouri has better than the 12th best team in this conference. But also, again, depends on your voting strategy. But when I vote in these types of things, they're not a power rankings for me. They are a projection on the predicted order of finish, which is what it's called.
Yeah.
And so to do that, I don't think you can fairly complete that exercise without looking at a team's schedule. And Missouri drew either the number one or number two most favorable schedule in the conference. I mean, Missouri could be pretty average this year and go 4-4 in the league. And if you go 4-4 in the league, I don't think you're finishing 12th in the standing. So that to me is probably the most underrated team. The other one I would put into that mix, Tennessee at 9. I mean, it's hard to figure because Tennessee's situation is probably no better than the ninth best situation. Actually, Tennessee's at 10, and Missouri. Anyway, Tennessee's at 9 or 10, somewhere in that range.
They're in between A&M and Oklahoma.
Yeah, and I think if you're looking at their situation roster wise, quarterback wise, sure. But again, I have to look at the schedule, and I mean Tennessee starts the season well on its way to four conference victories because it drew the four weakest teams in the conference in Arkansas, Vanderbilt, Kentucky, and Mississippi State. So, yeah, Tennessee's well on its way to no worse than a 4-4 record in the SEC unless it blows one of those four games. So I could see Tennessee finishing higher than this based on their schedule draw. And like I said, Missouri at 12 is too low.
I think I agree with how – when I used to fill out the ballot, I did it the same way you did. I'm trying to predict what I think is going to happen. I'm not going to bat 1,000. No one is. But it's one of those things where I do think I would have had Texas 1, but for the reasons we were laying out that a lot of the people that attend SEC Media Days still have the, you know, this ain't the Big 12 attitude.
Mm-hmm.
It did surprise me a little bit to see Texas as the preseason favorite.
Well, yeah, and I think because they're fresh off the college football playoff semifinal appearance, and also the guy with the last name of Manning on the jersey, like that's an SEC name,
yeah.
Right?
Well, that's what I was telling Tim. I go, you don't understand, man. There's a Manning in the SEC. It's been a while. There's going to be some giddiness.
Yeah, as provincial as the voting is, that is not being discounted just because Texas is the SEC newcomer. You throw a Manning in the quarterback position, and those SEC long timers, the guys that have had a ballot for 67 years, they're voting Texas number one.
Did anything else surprise you?
I don't think so. I thought, you know, the top end would be some ordering of Texas and Georgia at 1-2. Not terribly surprised it's Texas at one. I think the quarterback situation explains that.
Yeah.
I thought Alabama, LSU would be some ordering of 3-4. Here we have it, Alabama 3, LSU 4. Don't have a huge argument with that. I think LSU's schedule maybe is a little tougher than Bama's.
And,
so I can buy
and honestly,
that.
For me, it's just like Bama gets them at home.
Yeah, that's where the break is for me. I think maybe the one that grabs my attention is the gap between Florida and Oklahoma. Florida is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and Oklahoma is 10th. And I think if you're looking at two teams that can be an upgrade and be playoff contenders this year that were not last year from the SEC, I think Florida and Oklahoma are the tip of the spear of that conversation. They were not playoff contenders last year. Florida finished hot, but they were out of the playoff hunt by that point. Oklahoma was miserable last season. But I think they are two teams that could be contenders this year, or because they have the two toughest schedules in the country, not just the conference. I think Florida and Oklahoma have the nation's two toughest schedules. They could go, you know, 2-6. In the league. Oklahoma doesn't have one layup on the draw, and Florida's schedule is pretty tough too. And so I'm not terribly surprised to see Oklahoma down there at 10th, because that tells me voters did peek at their schedule, A. B, they were also influenced by Oklahoma's record from last season.
Yeah.
But seeing Florida then all the way up at 6, that doesn't follow the same strategy then, because I think Florida and Oklahoma's schedules are comparable. And yet Florida got the love at 6, Oklahoma down at 10. That tells me voters were probably pretty influenced by Florida's hot finish, whereas Oklahoma, the upset against Alabama aside, they limped to the finish. But this is not the same Oklahoma team. I mean, you might as well not even look at last season when evaluating Oklahoma. Look at the schedule, sure.
Yeah.
And hold them factor. I can see that being a factor in them being 10th, but I actually think that 10th place vote for Oklahoma is probably more based on the way they played last season, which is not really relevant anymore.
Tim, this was the other thing, or maybe I'll let Blake set it. What would you set the over-under of number of teams in the league that will finish with 6 wins or more in league play? So 6-2 or better.
Ooh,
because we had 3 last year, right?
Yeah, I think I'd set the over under 3.5.
Doesn't it feel like this? Like, it feels like one of these weird years where, like, it feels like Texas, Georgia, and Alabama could maybe only lose to each other. And then I just wonder if it's a bunch of, like, mush in between 5 and 3 and 4 and 4 after that.
Well,
you can't, everybody can't win.
I see that up and down the conference. I see that. Like, so I didn't fill out a ballot for this conference exercise, but I did for our company's predicted order of finish. And I had a much easier time, I thought, filling out 1 through 4. Alabama versus LSU was tough and what have you, but 1 through 4 didn't give me too much trouble, and neither did 13 through 16. I knew who I thought were the 4 weakest teams, and then it was just ordering them. But then you're left with this glob of 8 teams, and the team that I put 5th on my ballot, I could see finishing 12th. The team I put 12th, I could see finishing 5th, and in anywhere in between. Like, that mess of 8 teams in the middle, they're all pretty good teams. I don't think any of them, stink. I think if they were in the Big 12, they'd be in the race.
Easy, you're sounding like Lane now.
Easy. Yeah, now I'm sounding like Greg Sankey, right? But I think that is the SEC's argument, right?
Yeah, no, Todd, totally, yes.
Propaganda campaign about how it's the toughest league, et cetera. It is that glob of 8 teams in the middle. It's like all those teams are pretty good, but somebody's got to lose, and they all play each other quite a bit in that middle mess. And so that is sort of the difficulty in this ranking exercise. I found it so much easier to do these rankings exercises when the conference was at 14 teams. I mean, forget about 12 teams. Even when it was at 14 teams and you had it split into 2 divisions.
I was going to say, I kind of miss divisions.
Yeah, that was much easier to project things. It sure made – there's some pros and cons to divisions going away, but it sure made the summer homework exercises a lot easier when we had divisions. Figuring out who should be 5th and who should be 12th in the SEC, that's one of the most difficult things I'll do during the summer, which tells you how easy this life of a sports writer can be in the off season.
You know, it's funny because I felt like all throughout the offseason when we talked to Blake, I was the one trying to steer it into, hey, let's actually talk football. And now we're all talking football, and I have a question about the playoff. Because Dan Wetzel wrote a column today for ESPN essentially saying, if the Big Ten and SEC are not going to come to an agreement, crazy idea, why don't we just keep it at 12? And it's kind of funny when we think back to this idiotic discussion of expanding the NCAA basketball tournament when no one wants it. And how many people out there really want this to get expanded to 16? I think 12 is great. But Blake, where are we on this right now? And could Wetzel's column have some validity to it, where if the Big Ten and SEC don't see eye to eye on auto bids and whatnot, could it just stay at 12 for a little while?
Well, I think it does have validity to it because, I mean, we heard from Greg Sankey point blank on Monday that if the SEC does not get one of its preferred expansion plans, we know the SEC is against the Big Ten plan. We've talked about how that changed. They're now against the Big Ten plan. Each side has dug in its heels. And Greg Sankey, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said, if the SEC doesn't get one of its preferred expansion plans, then it's staying at 12. And I don't see the SEC, I put it at
good,
a non-zero chance that they'll change their mind and throw their weight behind the Big Ten plan, but it sure didn't sound like it from the boss man this week. It sounded like they're not going back to that Big Ten plan. And the Big Ten sure makes it seem like they're not heading in the direction of the 5+11 plan unless the SEC adds a 9th conference game. And I don't think the SEC at this point, if I had to call the election, it's not decided yet, I don't think the SEC is going to add that 9th conference game. So if everybody sticks to their battle lines, no decision. We've heard this from Rich Clark from the CFP, the executive director. Rich Clark says that the Big Ten and the SEC have to agree to on a format to expand the playoff. But he's also said no decision is a decision.
Yeah.
So if you can't decide on how to expand, that in itself becomes the collective decision. You can't decide on how to expand, so you persist with the current model. And so, if you were handicapping odds if you can bet on everything now, right? So why not this? If you're handicapping odds of which playoff format is going to be in place for 2026 and beyond, I would now probably give the current format better odds than the Big Ten's plan. Because for all the momentum that the Big Ten seemed to have behind its plan like 4 or 5 months ago, that's gone now. And unless the SEC retreats toward that plan, which given all public indications, they're not going to, that plan is not going to move forward. And so then, as Sankey laid out, there's really only two paths forward. Either the Big Ten acquiesces to one of these expanded playoff plans like the 5+11 that the SEC is behind, or no decision to no agreement to expand becomes a decision by default to stay at 12.
Blake, we really appreciate it, buddy. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, guys.
That is Blake Topmeyer, senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. Tim, have you been keeping up with the NFLPA executive that is now resigned, Lloyd Howell?
No, I have not.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Escape the heat to True North Convenience Stores and get any size True Oasis Fountain Drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi Fountain Drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, Swift Rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you, Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream. Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.